Hello, guys. We're back here with the Op Lab podcast, and really excited today. Always excited. I enjoy doing these podcasts. But today we have a special guest, Mr. Samuel Farnsworth. He's really, I consider him part of the family, especially the Alliance family. I've known Samuel since he was a little guy. I think he was in our first kids' jiu-jitsu program.
Yeah.
He and his sister Claire, I think, were both in that program, and he's trained with us in our group classes, and I had the opportunity to do some private training with him last year. We were really excited about that. But for you guys that don't know Samuel, he's also he's a professional actor, and we're excited to have him here now because I think in November, you said November 5th, it's the third season of Dickinson coming out on Apple TV.
Correct.
And Samuel is a regular on that series. And so if you haven't checked it out the first two seasons, you can still go back and check them out. But the third season is coming up. And really excited to have him here today. And so just want to start like we do with most of our OpLab podcasts, letting Samuel tell a little bit of his story. I said I've known Samuel for a long time, but just kind of his, you know, how did he get from Greenville, South Carolina, to be on Apple TV you know, into his acting career, and he's living in New York. He's here visiting in Greenville right now. But a little bit of his story we'll start with, and then we have a few other things we want to talk about as well. But we'll just start with that. So if you don't know Samuel, he can kind of give you a little bit of history and background on himself. So glad to have you here, Samuel.
Appreciate hey, it. Happy to be here. It's funny, like, I feel like I still need to call you Mr. Billy, even though I guess I could probably get away calling you just Billy, but
yes, you can.
But it's just, it just reminds me of, it's because we've known each other for so long. Like, I don't actually know how long, but I feel like I moved to Greenville when I was four, and my mom probably started training with you, like 2000, and, like, I have no idea, but I was little, and we've been through, like, so many different locations, so many different, like, forms of teaching. It's like I was just even seeing all the construction they're doing in here, and like every time I come back there's a new surprise, like a new thing, or you're teaching a little differently, or something at the gym's changed or whatnot. But it's good, it keeps me on my toes. But I'm Samuel. I grew up in Greenville. My mom is Lara Farnsworth, who honestly, if you're listening to this, you probably know, and she works at the gym. But yeah, I've been coming here and working out for a very long time, and I basically grew up doing my kind of thing with acting. That was my extracurricular. I didn't really play any sports. I mean, I tried everything, but that didn't really seem to be for me. But I did a lot of the community theater, local plays around town, ARMS after school drama program, and then ended up going to Fine Arts Center for the half day program in theater, and then to the South Carolina Governor's School, and then to North Carolina School of the Arts, and then in August of 2018 I moved to New York, and that's when I started kind of acting professionally. And it's kind of a cool story. My first in-person audition in New York was for the TV show Fraylin for the TV show Dickinson. And I got it, which is amazing. It's an Apple TV show, which a lot of people still don't know what that is, but it's a relatively new streaming service by Apple, so like your iPhone. And Dickinson is about Emily Dickinson, played by Hailee Steinfeld. And like Mr. Billy mentioned, the third season will be coming out November 5th, and then they'll release three episodes, and then an episode every week. But, like you also said, the first two seasons are already out, and it's a fun, quirky, crazy show, and it's kind of, you know, been the main thing I've done since being in New York with the two seasons. And it's cool because it's like Apple's, we were one of their premier shows, and now we're the only one with a season three, which is kind of an honor. And it's partly because we got really lucky. We finished filming season two right before the pandemic, and then we were able to pick back up for season three at the start of 2021 through the summer. But I play a character called George Gould. He was a real life person, good friend and love interest, kind of love interest, but like I like to say that, but more he just has a crazy crush on Emily Dickinson. Yeah, but it's been really cool to work with the character for so long because the character's kind of grown up with me, which has been a really exciting thing. And you know, in the first season, I was playing, especially in the early episodes, a character that was just written that I got cast in. But then now with the second season and the third season, they brought me back, and I know they're kind of writing for me and knowing what I can do well or everything. And the character in the beginning was very like kind of almost like nerdy, quirky, and just head over heels for Emily. But now he's kind of growing up, and the third season takes place during the Civil War, so things are getting serious, and my character's kind of grappling with what's going on in a split country, and his friends going off to war, and yeah, so it was really cool to kind of grow with the character and be a little more serious in this season. But yeah, but I worked at Manhattan Theater Club. So usually I've done mostly theater growing up and around here, and then now worked mainly in TV, worked a little bit at Manhattan Theater Club in theater. And it's funny because they're like acting for film and TV or theater is very similar, but also, you know, there's some like really different different elements and different parts. And I love doing both. But it's kind of just a different, muscle group for each one. But that's been really exciting. Yeah, now I'm back in Greenville doing this podcast. And yeah, it's kind of the short story, short version.
Okay.
Yeah.
So we talked a little bit before, we've had, good many conversations, especially when we're doing some of our one-on-one training. We have some time to talk afterwards and so forth. And, you know, just I'm very, one of the goals of this podcast was be able to, share different perspectives. So, mm-hmm. A lot of things that I write about and talk about, relate, we like to say, mental, physical, spiritual, but a lot of it's physical. Like when we talk about even like mental toughness, the mental part of, physical training, there's a huge piece of the mental part to that, whether it be, just the physical training, like, whether it's fitness related, or like in our jiu-jitsu program, it's a very mental aspect as well. But the mental part is everywhere. And so, we're talking about like, dealing with, different aspects of that. And so for me, like, thinking of acting, I've never acted, but I have been on camera before, and just the nerves and, it's very different, out of my comfort zone. So I think there's probably a lot of correlation there that sometimes, because I see you on camera, you look super comfortable, And so, I'm curious to see, do you still get nervous, or and how do you prepare for a scene, or is there still nerves there, or have you done it so much through your life that that's kind of just more natural to you now, or do you still go through some of that?
Yeah, totally. Well, let me ask you, do you get nervous doing this podcast?
Yes.
Are you the same amount of nervous, or are you less nervous? Like, if you were being filmed right now, would you be more nervous, or is this equally as nerve-wracking just speaking on it?
Especially if I was being filmed by somebody else.
Yeah.
But for whatever reason, like if I'm doing like a Zoom call, I feel much better because I'm just sitting in front of the computer. But
right.
Somebody else is sitting there with the camera.
Right. For sure.
And it logically, it doesn't make any sense because it's the same thing.
Yeah.
But for whatever reason, that just like I'll use an example like Rafael and I talked about earlier today, like jiu-jitsu. So, you train hard. A lot of times, I think like training is harder than competition physically. But the psychology of it in competition is very different for me. So, and that's something I think we do to ourselves. Mm-hmm. But I think people deal with it in different ways. And I'm just curious, and obviously practice in exposing yourself to no matter what. Like the first podcast I did, I was more nervous than I am today.
Yes.
But if there's any particular, like for me, even today, I did a little bit of box breathing before I came in.
Oh, really?
The podcast, yeah. So it just kind of calms me down. So it's curious if you have like a ritual or anything you go through.
Yeah.
Before you,
well,
before.
I mean, that's just a great point. Like the training aspect, because quite literally, when doing like a play in theater, you're rehearsing. You know, so you're just doing it over and over and over again. And then when you go out, you're not like, it's so funny because anybody who doesn't work as an actor, like, hasn't had that experience, they always say, how did you remember all those lines? And they always say, you know, they wouldn't do it because they being in front of that many people would make them nervous. And it's funny, it's just like training in the gym for maybe like a competition or training jiu-jitsu and then going and competing. One, memorizing, it's so funny. That's the easiest part of it, you know? People always think that's so wild, but you're spending so much time doing it, and it's like a muscle. For example, I got an audition last night that was due today and had to memorize the lines, you know, last night and then do it today. But I've done that so many times that I've gotten actually really good at memorizing. And then when it comes to the performing element, I do think preparation is huge. I worked as an understudy, which, for I guess if you don't know what that is, that means that in my case, this guy Alex Wolf, who's like an actual celebrity, was playing a role in a play, and I learned the lines as well, learned the character, and if something were to happen to him, or if he was sick or to go on vacation, I would go on stage and fill his part, right? Now, that would be scary because I would be learning it, and I'd have rehearsals that they would put me in, and I would, you know, watch the show every day, and I would have to be there for all the stuff. But if I had been thrown on, I would be so nervous just because I wouldn't have the reps that he has. I wouldn't have the experience with those cast members. That would have been crazy. Now, usually in a show, you rehearse a bunch, and so you feel really good about it. Film and TV, though, it's equal parts scarier and equal parts not as scary, because when you go to film a scene, one, it's just a scene rather than like a whole show, but you know something like they cut and you go and do it again, so you have a little bit of the freedom in theater. If I lose a line or just something goes wrong, that's not even an option, right? Because like the play will have to go through. But the play's been rehearsed. Now, film and TV, I know that, yeah, if I can mess up, you still don't want to mess up, but you know you can. But say I do show up on film and TV and I don't know my lines for that day, well, there's 100 people whose job it is that they got there early and today has been budgeted to film that scene. If you don't know the scene, well, that's just not an option either, because that's what everybody there is working and jobs depend on. So I couldn't just be like, hey, I don't know my big monologue for today. Like, I don't even know what would happen. So that can be the nerve-wracking part of film and TV, is because you also haven't rehearsed it. So you're going in and you're like, it's harder to measure how well you know it because you haven't actually done it. you don't have that preparation, that rehearsal. So that sometimes can psych me out, but usually, you know, it's just so important to relax and be prepared in any way you can be, more prepared than you probably even need to be, just to be so that you can relax. But it was interesting, you know, with the whole public speaking or being in front of people thing, I actually did that 23andMe genetic testing, or Claire made me do it. I don't know if you've ever done that.
I have, yeah.
And it tells you like where you're, you know, what your genetic makeup is and where your ancestors are from. I was checking back into that because I was listening to a podcast that they were talking about it. And I saw that apparently I have a gene that odds are I am more likely to be comfortable with public speaking. Or I have a gene that makes me less likely to fear public speaking, and a gene that's less likely to have a fear of heights. And I actually just went on this climbing trip upstate, and one of my buddies who went with me, who was a great climber, really struggled with the fear of heights. He still did great, obviously, but, you know, that was very kind of crippling for him. And we did, like, trad climbing, so that we were with a guide, but it's not like there was a vault, you know, where you feel really safe. He would go up and put in the gear, like, in cracks. And so when you get up there 100 feet up, like 100 feet up or more than that, you realize that you're just like, he stuck something in a crack, and you're like, oh wow, this is kind of scary. But I definitely didn't have that freezing fear of heights. I mean, I could justify that it was scary and I was up high, and if I fell, you know, that wouldn't be good. But I definitely didn't have the natural, crippling, paralyzing fear. And I think, bringing this up, I wonder if that also is just a genetic thing with the performing, because I think it is a skill and you can rehearse and be prepared. And I think that's probably actually like 90% of it, but there probably is a percentage that is just, it was a little maybe easier for me, or not even easier for me, but it would be harder for someone else.
Yeah.
But like you said, there's just different techniques. It's interesting. I'd like to hear you talk more about the box breathing, because I'm actually not that familiar with it, okay. But I have done, like, voice work is a huge part of the actor training thing, and there's this kind of voice technique called, from this teacher, Kristen Linklater, who I trained with in Scotland 3 times, and that's all about, you know, the voice and breath work, and I find that is really helpful, one, for me just as a performer, but also with those kind of things, too. For example, I had to go speak to the students at Governor's School, and I did a voice warm-up before that. One, to, you know, because I was going to be at a big stage so everybody could hear me, but also just to have, it's my way of getting control over, like, my mind and body. I found it's, like, the best, works best for me with those kind of things. And it almost has, like, sort of meditative qualities to it, even though that's not necessarily the purpose, but it's really...
I think, so we, you know, we have a... and we were talking again before, you know, Unbeatable Mind program, which I've talked about on several podcasts, you know, program started by Mark Divine, you know, former Navy SEAL, and done a lot of training with him in their coaching program right now to become a certified Unbeatable Mind coach. But in that, we have what's called the Big Four skills of mental toughness. And so the Big Four are, number one is basically breath control. And so that's the purpose in the breath control, is to control the arousal state. So if you get super nervous and, like you mentioned it, like you know, freeze is like, you know, that's the kind
of... You're holding your breath,
yeah. Right? And so, you know, you want to learn to control your breath, you know, obviously if you're, I would assume, acting, you can't, if you're talking, you've got to be breathing, but...
Yeah.
But
this is important.
But you know, it's interesting hearing your perspective of just the warm up, the breath work you're doing there is creating that same, it's still creating that synergy and creating some kind of like calming effect.
Right.
And so if you've ever done like an ice bath,
awful.
Yeah. And so the natural reaction is the fight or flight and freeze.
I completely have that. I just felt scared. Yeah. I got in the thing and felt scared and like I wanted to run away. Yeah. It was bizarre.
So it's one of the best, I think. It's a lot of benefits in doing the ice bath in terms of like inflammation and all these other things. But I think one of the key things is you can learn that you can control that effect by your breath. And of course, Wim Hof is probably the most famous.
Right.
You know, for teaching his method of breathing and being able to do, you know, all kind of, you know, amazing things with that. But it's all related back to controlling the nervous system and so forth. And then, you know, some of the other skills are, you know, positivity. You know, so just in working on controlling that internal dialogue.
Because
we're naturally, you know, I think this is important, like we're naturally wired negative. You know, it's not, you know, I tell people all the time, it's like, if you have negative thoughts, it doesn't mean you're a bad person.
Right.
We're all that way. It's kind of a survival mechanism. Uh-huh. So you have to train it, like you're talking about training, you know, for acting and getting comfortable on stage, you know, you have to train that positive part too. And then we have also visualization, which I'm assuming, like in your rehearsal, you're probably, you know, you're visualizing the scene or the line, how you're going to say the lines and that sort of thing. And then the last one is micro goals. So, you know, sometimes if it's, and it's kind of interesting, just listening to you talk, like with the difference between a play where, you know, you're out there and you're going through the whole thing and versus to me, like a scene would be kind of like a micro goal. Like,
yeah.
Like you don't have to, you just have to focus on that one scene.
Right.
And then, okay, now, okay, I've done that scene, I can go to the next. So it's, you're in a way applying that without even knowing you're.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I can take all four of those lessons and think of, specific examples of how it relates right back to that. But that's the tricky thing with the film TV, because with the micro goals, like today you just know you have to walk in the door and everybody else talking, you have that one line and it's a really chill day. But then you also have the day where you're like, this is the big emotional moment or whatever. And in a play, at least you get to go through the whole thing and finally, you know, reach it, and you've been going the whole way and you have the whole through line. Sometimes it's really hard to come out of context and do that in the film and TV. But yeah, and with the breathing, like, I also, a big thing with acting is usually with freezing, quite literally, but when you forget a line. I've been in so many acting classes where, you know, somebody's doing their speech and they go up and they just completely are holding their breath. And usually a teacher I've seen a lot of time will get them to breathe and it just comes flooding back.
Crazy. Yeah.
And what I really like, and you should, Kristen Linklater has a book, Freeing the Natural Voice. And I guess that's probably what the people always just call it, Linklater. But, her breath work, which I feel like is a little different than what it sounds like this is and the other stuff I've done with kind of yoga and more controlled breathing, or even like on the Carol bike, you know, where they have you in for five and out.
Yep.
I think the idea is it's far less like muscular in the sense that it's all about releasing and just the awareness of it, right? So there's never like the goal of trying to they literally don't even say inhale or exhale. It's the incoming breath, because it's almost like the breath is so natural, and I mean it's going to happen anyway, and it's happening to you rather than you making it happen.
Okay.
And for example, with like how much breath, I don't even quite know what I'm going to say, but I know how big of a breath to take in before I start speaking, and I feel like that's pretty interesting that your body kind of intuitively knows like this is going to be a smaller thought. Or this is going to be a big, long thought. And then this one, you know, and then how it relates to the voice, if it's going to show some emotion or if it's going to try to hold emotion or if it's going to be more intellectual or whatever it is. But I've always kind of liked that aspect about the breathing, because I feel like that plays more into the relaxation element of being breathed rather than controlling breathing. And it's almost kind of like a life lesson too. It's like letting it happen rather than trying to make everything happen.
Yeah.
And then with the positivity, and I know before we started this, you had talked about how, you know, it's always so easy to hear about how, you know, what people want to share, the successful stuff, and not everybody always wants to talk about the struggles. And it's so funny because I spend all my time talking about the yeses and the moments in my life where things said yes, and obviously those are so important. But the interesting thing about a career in the arts is you're being said no to. You're not even being said no to. A no would be nice. You're just not hearing back if you audition all the time. It's completely normal. You hear tons of stories about people that auditioned literally thousands of times before they got a part. And so that's having me constantly. So technically, I'm being told no way more than I'm being told yes. And that's usually, or even say, you know, you get a big yes, that me with Dickinson getting to work on it for 4 years, but then now this is our final season and I'll have to find something else. And that always happens. Even if you're on a show for 10 years, it will eventually end. Or even, obviously movies are kind of one unless there's sequels and stuff, but even still, that only films for so many months, and then you have other months, and it's like, what are you going to do during that time? So I totally see why a lot of people, one, advise their kids not to do it. I see why people would be too scared to do it. And I see why, and this is kind of the point of my life I'm now, where people are kind of giving up or quitting. Actually, a lot of the time they're kind of realizing maybe they're interested in something else, which I think that's actually great. But I can also see how people just can't take it after a few years. And I think what hopefully I've been able to do is keep a positive mindset when I'm not hearing back, basically getting the no for the part. I feel proud that I'm pretty good at not thinking, why didn't they like me? I'm thinking, what did the other person have that I didn't? I'm able to kind of get my head around the fact that, like, oh, I'm getting closer. Maybe that casting director likes me more now. And, you know, I didn't get the part, but this is my second time going into that person. So, like, clearly I'm gaining some traction. Or, you know, maybe they actually really needed someone older. Or these things that are kind of out of my control. So I'm not beating up on myself so much that I'm kind of... Or just, you know, if I've had auditions that didn't go well, and rather than just feeling mortified about it, I know that that's just one, and I can go laugh with my buddies about it, you know, or share the experience with somebody who can relate to it, rather than just take it so personally. And I think with what I'm trying to do, you have to be that way. Otherwise, it would be way too much, just if you couldn't find some way to have a positive outlook on it.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's awesome to share. It's like, I think it reminds me of like baseball. I'm not a huge baseball fan, but like if you hit, you know, 300, so you're maybe, yeah, you know, you're striking out, you know, more than you're, I'm not striking out, but you're getting out more than you're,
yeah,
than you're getting on base, you know, and you, if you do that, you know, 3 out of 10 times, you'll be in the Hall of Fame.
Right.
You know? And I would imagine for acting, it's probably, you know, probably
kind of the same thing. Yeah.
The same thing, right? I think I read, it was, you may know this story, I think it was Mark Ruffalo. Like he went through, like, I forget how many auditions.
Yeah. Before I hadn't heard of this.
You know, and then now, of course, you know, he's
Mark Ruffalo. Ruffalo,
right? But I mean, it's the same thing, right? How many times, you know, was he turned down before he got the part?
And that's just one of the most common stories you hear. And also what you hear all the time, which is a huge misconception, is like they're an overnight success. I even know people who have been relatively quick and successful, but there's no such thing as an overnight success. And it's kind of completely discrediting how hard some people have worked. Yep. Or they're like, this is their first big thing. And then I'll always go to their IMDb and see that they've done like, yep, 15 projects, you, yep, know? This is just what's really put them on the map. But more often than not, everybody's been working for, yep, a very, yep, long,
well,
time.
Well, like yourself. I mean, you're young. You got on a big show. You know, like I said, you're, you know, pretty quick once you got to New York, right?
Right.
But how long have you been acting?
Yeah, exactly. Oh my God.
Over half your life.
I've been doing, right, tons of, yeah, yeah, training, yeah, and prepping. Yeah. And absolutely. Yeah. And that is totally how it felt too. You know, that it's fun to share the anecdote that it was, you know, like first in person in New York, and that it was kind of quick, but it was years in the making.
Yeah.
For sure. And, because, yeah, I wouldn't have gotten the job if I wasn't good at it yet. And that's that whole, like, 10,000 hours concept thing as well, you know, just putting in the time and working at it and getting better, which, yeah, is, I mean, that's how it should work.
Yeah, awesome. There's one other thing we talked a little bit about, if we have a little bit of time to maybe discuss, and you know, I think this could go in a lot of different ways. Just you know, like I said, we had a conversation about it, but you know, when we talk about you know, at the gym, like whether so we just kind of use the example like behavioral change. Like if someone's it could be they're trying to lose weight, or they're trying to change their diet, or they're trying to start, mm-hmm, a fitness program, or they're, it doesn't matter, whatever, you know. And so a big piece of that is like really changing their habits.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not to kind of break it down like to a process.
Right.
You know, if let's use a simple thing, like if someone wants to lose weight, you know, well, it's a few basic things they have, you know, they need to do. They probably need to change their diet.
Right.
They need to start an exercise program. They need to be looking at their sleep, how they're managing stress, all those things. But a lot of that's just habits, right? That you create. And then, I think the first time I remember reading about this, and I think we even had a little bit of discussion, Atomic Habits.
Mm-hmm.
And in that book, he talks about really, the one that pops in my mind is he's talking about, if someone's a smoker, right? So,
right.
You know, they want to quit smoking. And so one of the best ways for them to learn to quit smoking, obviously they're changing a habit, they have to change their identity. So they still identify as a smoker trying to quit smoking, they're mm-hmm. going to have a harder time. But if they can change that identity to thinking of themselves as a non-smoker, once they change that, it's much easier for them to create those habits. And I think what we're talking about, so I was watching a movie one day, and I think it was Joaquin Phoenix. I forget what the movie
yeah.
was. And because he really, I mean, from my perception, is he like really gets into the character.
Yeah, he's
and so he
pretty good.
Seems like a different person, right? He's not the same guy, right? And so to me, that's like, well, it's the same thing in a way, right? So, but obviously there's probably some tools, some skills that you, when you're, you know, preparing for your part as George, I mean, you're not... I mean, I see Samuel, right? But you're not Samuel. You're that guy. Like, you're changing. So you know, I think what we're talking about is, you know, is there some transferability there maybe for people that they could even utilize that? If they're not an actor, like some of the things that you get into character, if they're trying to change their, you know, go through that same process, maybe change their identity to some extent, to see themselves in a different light. You know, well, that, I think that's what we're talking about. I'm just curious,
yeah,
from an acting standpoint.
Yeah, I mean, that's super interesting. And I love that part of his book. I think that's just so true that you have to, I mean, that's like, it's just believing yourself. And it's so interesting, the forming good habits and also getting rid of bad habits and how ingrained they really get.
Yeah.
And how he talks about how progress, you would want it to just be like, you know, just getting better and better over time, but it kind of has like a U-shape where you might make some like really instant, you know, progress or results, which usually always happens, I feel like, especially with maybe weight loss or muscle gain, and then you plateau for a while, and then I feel like a lot of people can't make it through that,
yep,
that part. And I think that's true of just everything. And I think the visualization or the identifying or starting there with a belief in yourself that you are or aren't this, like, I think the same thing would go with public speaking. If you're like, I'm not good at public speaking, and you believe that, then you're never going to be good at public speaking. And that might just be completely fine for you. But you might have to do it, and if you have to do it, would be a somewhat pleasant experience.
Yeah.
Or at least a rewarding experience rather than miserable. And so I think, like, that's exactly where you have to start. The acting question is interesting. Joaquin Phoenix is so good. And it's also very, you know, Daniel Day-Lewis is famous for that, being, like, called Lincoln on set, you know, referred to that and staying in the character the whole time. And that's actually in the acting world called method acting. And it's funny because there's a great history to it that I won't go into, but it now is kind of like frowned upon in a way because it can be dangerous. You know, it's like you can, and you know, these guys, and they do such a great job, and they're changing their
yes.
bodies yeah. and their voices. And I mean, it's truly incredible, but also I guess sometimes people go too far and like lose who they are. And for me, it was interesting because that always appealed to me. I thought that was like the coolest thing ever. Like when I was younger, I was like obsessed with Heath Ledger, and like his performance in The Joker as well as Joaquin's. But I remember watching, if you watch Heath in, say, The Dark Knight and Lords of Dogtown and just really, I mean, take any one of his movies, you can't even recognize him. He's so... Or like Brokeback Mountain, that's a great one. So you got like a surfer guy, you got the Joker, and you got a cowboy. And it's just completely different. I always thought that was so cool. With my role, it was funny because I found that if I was trying to just play a character, it was almost getting in my way because so much of George was me being there. It's like he was so excited to like talk to Emily Dickinson, read her poems, and be around her. And that's exactly how I felt being around Haley. I was like, I'm just so happy to be here and be like talking with you and everything. And I was able to notice that some of the things were just, it was almost like I could just play it exactly how it was Samuel and Haley. And it was kind of the same thing as George and Emily. And I found that really interesting because I think that's probably what I needed to do and didn't need to do much more than that. But I do think that would be like that it's an interesting concept how those actors, because they do go so far and like sometimes can like believe that they're the character, that is there something there to that that would apply to other people trying to make big life changes?
But hopefully in a positive way.
Hopefully, yeah, obviously in a positive way. I don't know. I think that's just a great question. I'm interested in it, but not sure. I do think that the things you were talking about are huge for making those changes, and you know, positive thinking, visualization, are those are all micro goals or ways in to get you to probably where you want and need to be. And I wonder if you could use those techniques when developing a character, you know, like if you were to kind of sit down doing the homework and you like kind of made a list of those, like you would do for yourself, but for the character, what that would be like, you know, I feel like that might be kind of interesting. And that is, you know, they're similar. Like one of the first things you learn when playing characters, what does the character want and what are they going to do to get what they want? And that's kind of getting in the same headspace of what do you want for your life and how are you going to achieve that? And being specific about that makes everything far more clear. And I feel like also just, you know, we were trained together at the beginning, I guess was that the beginning of this year? Yeah, it was. And what I realized is even though I've been growing up exercising, and have parents who, you know, never had sweets in the house or never had, like, soda in the house. I didn't actually really know what eating healthy was or what working out efficiently by myself was. And I think that's huge. Sometimes now that I actually do think I have a pretty strong understanding of what that is, or at least what that is for me, when I see somebody else maybe trying to achieve a similar goal, and I'm seeing where they're messing up only because I know that's where I messed up. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, you just want to help them out. And I just wonder how many times when people are making a change and they think they're heading in the right direction, and they probably are, and maybe they're at that plateau point too when they're not seeing results and they just give up, but they might actually be doing something that's not necessarily the most efficient or the most helpful for them.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know, because, like, now when I'm at the Blink in New York and I'm thinking of you, it's not about just going as heavy and getting as many reps. I'm just slow and controlled through all of it. I try to do a set that's, you know, I won't even, like, count to 10, but, right. You know, just, having that judgment of myself, too, to know I could have gone slower. It's like I don't even need to really count. Yep. I've had experiences with you, and it's, like, the whole practice thing. I know what it feels like to really like take time and like the different parts of the exercises and everything. And I mean, that's all been huge for me. And I feel like the same thing with probably public speaking and acting, people just have some sort of, they're doing something wrong or something they don't understand. And if they could have experiences doing it correctly or, just positive, good experiences, then they'd probably be less afraid, and then they'd get more reps in, and then they'd feel more confident and more likely to stick with something, make a change. And I think also there's something to, you know, falling off but getting back on, because that's been big for me too, is at some point you're just going to fall short or something, or you get off track or life's going to take its way. And I think the better you can get at getting back on the horse or trying again is really maybe the key.
Yeah.
Because you can be doing great for a short amount of time, but the key to everything is time spent. You know, if I'm so guilty of like going into the gym, working out really hard one day, and then it's like, well, now I'm too sore and can't go back, and then somebody's in town, and then I've forgotten my goals. And it's like, if I just did a little bit every day, or if that was practicing memorizing, or if that was whatever it was, practicing guitar or getting good at a skill, language or something, you would get so much further in the long run than just going big and hard right up front.
Yeah. I think the word that is kind of resonates with me with that is resiliency. So I think that's, you know, especially as I get older, that's a word that becomes even more important, like the ability to bounce back, you know. And so, because we all, you know, it's never, like you said, it's never going to, you know, people think sometimes progression is like this, you know, linear path, you know, in anything.
Right.
And it's usually not. It's all messed up.
Yeah.
But if you just keep getting back on, like you said, you know, and then also I think I love how you put it, like, you know, if you have a perceived failure or setback, you know, if you can learn from that, then it's really not a failure.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
You know, then you kind of can step forward with the next thing. So, I think it's, you know, especially, and we were talking before, I appreciate you being on, because it's hard, you know, I've tried to get some other younger people on the podcast, and so, yeah. But it's, I understand it's not easy stuff to talk about, but I think it's, you know, for me, it's, maybe I had people telling me that when I was your age, but I don't remember it that way, you
right.
know? And so I think it's important to get that message out there to people, like, you know, it's just really just, you know, keep getting up and trying to get a little better each day. And there are people out there that want to help you too.
Yeah.
You know, so that's the other side of it. And then I think in sharing the experiences, I think that's, you know, I'm part of in the Beetle of Mine. I have kind of like two boat crews. I have a boat crew that I work with here at the gym, and I have another boat crew that's other coaches. And it's come up several times, like, what's the biggest takeaway from the boat crew? And it's like people sharing, you know, like sharing their experience, because, you know, you can see, you know, like in my boat crew that I'm in a Beetle of Mine, it's like, it's kind of funny because we're like five of us now, and I think it's five. But, you know, and I look at all those guys, if I'm sitting there, like, they all seem more, like, you know, not that we're having a contest, but they all seem more successful than me.
Yeah.
Right?
Oh, yeah, sure.
But then when they come around, they all feel the same way about everybody else.
Yeah.
And so, you know, that's a kind of unique perspective that we trust each other enough, not, you know, to kind of share insecurities and things like that. So it's been a really neat experience to do that. And I think that's, you know, I think sometimes that's, like I said, not just sharing, like, you know, all the positive things that, you know, everything's going great, but, you know, some of that, we all have challenges. So
yeah.
I appreciate you sharing, you know, especially, like I said, from an acting standpoint. I think a lot of people don't see that as, yeah, you go and do auditions, you're not getting every role.
Yeah, I mean, and people only see the show you're in, not the, all the shows you're not in.
Right.
And I totally get that. Like, I kind of feel that way about you. It's like, when have you fallen off the horse? I feel like you have such a standard of, you know, achieving your goals, and it's inspiring and stuff. But I'm, you know, as you say, I'm sure you're looking at these guys and being like, wow, like, I look up to them, and maybe not as worthy or not as good as them.
Yeah.
And I think that's important to know, the more experiences you get like that when just dealing with a person, always kind of knowing that in the back of the head, well, maybe you don't know, you know, what it is for them. And maybe it's different, maybe it's similar, but at least the experience is probably, the feeling is similar.
Yeah, cool. All right, well, I know I respect you, because I know you got to be somewhere today. So I appreciate you coming today for the podcast. It was awesome. I really enjoyed it. And before I forget, let's make sure, how do people find out more about you, and if they want to follow you? I know you're active on social media. So people can kind of keep up with you there, since you're not here in Greenville anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
Not well, you're here, but not
right.
not all the
yeah.
time. And so if you want to, and then you know, mention again when the show comes out and how people can watch that, and we'll kind of tie it up today.
Yeah, totally. Well, once again, you know, I'm Samuel Farnsworth. The show Dickinson, November 5th, first three episodes, and then one episode a week. But the first and second seasons are already up there, and you can watch them. You can watch it twice. You can watch it three times. It's on Apple TV Plus. Apple TV, you probably usually think of a little Apple TV box, but no, it's a streaming service just like Netflix, just like Amazon, just like Hulu. If you have an Apple product, it's super easy to access. But even if you don't, if you have a smart TV, if you have anything, you should be able to download the application or the service and watch it just like any other streaming service. And it would mean a lot to me. You know, you can follow me on Instagram. That seems to be the social media that I actually use. Just search my name, Samuel Farnsworth. My sister usually runs it. But, you know, if you have any questions, you can message me on that, and I will, you know, try my best to get back. I'm always around here at the gym, so, you know, come talk to my mom. But yeah, please watch. It would mean a lot. And I think this last season will be special. And I wanted to say thank you, Billy, for having me on. It was a lot of fun. I always love talking to you. I think that you're doing this podcast is a great idea. I'm getting so into podcasts that I think that this is great and a great thing for you to be doing. And I think you have a lot to offer and teach. And I think this is a really great way to have it. So everybody listening, you know, pay attention and listen to the next one and the next one.
All right. Thanks a lot, Samuel.
Thank you.
All right. Awesome. Thanks, guys.